I'm Amber.
And this is
Waking Up the Witch.
We're your neighborhood witches. Each week, we talk about all things witchy and connect with other humans in a storytelling format about navigating life on this floating rock.
We're two curious ladies trying to understand the human experience. But while we do that, we think it's important to honor the people that lived here before us and honor the cultures and traditions that we're being inspired by.
This podcast is about waking up the witch, which means we are learning and growing every day. That being said, we are always open to feedback on how we can do better.
The views and opinions of our guests don't necessarily reflect the views and opinions of Waking Up the Witch.
Now, let's go, ghouls!
Hey, Amber.
Hi, Taylor.
What's going on?
Same thing since we recorded yesterday, even though this is a week later to everyone else. Just going through the motions, trying not to fucking cry all the time. But it's nice to have these little moments of distractions.
Yeah.
And they're good distractions, and they're things that light me up and are a big part of my soul today too. So yeah, it'll be nice though. I'll have the rest of the day to go home and hold my girl.
Yeah,
it's crazy.
I just want to say that I think we're finding our groove in this podcast, and this is definitely a soul purpose of ours. And
yeah,
that
totally,
now we're just in it, and eventually it's going to be really, it's very rewarding emotionally, but mm-hmm. I think that financially and all the things, like the more effort and time we just keep putting into it, things are going to keep happening.
Yeah, I mean,
it feels so good.
We literally, like, it really has been so effortless for most of it, but especially like this season already, even before we officially launch, it's like our calendar is booked with so many great guests, and like we're recording right now and this isn't going to come out for 5 weeks which mm-hmm. is nice, because then we'll get like good summertime I think too, and when we need to have little breaks. But we just have a good groove and really incredible guests that we're booking. And we've kind of really found our magic mm-hmm. with what Waking Up the Witch is and what we represent, and mm-hmm. I'm excited for all the other people we get to book that we haven't even done yet.
Or met.
Yeah, totally.
So excited. So happy.
So grateful.
So grateful.
Yeah, this is a really fun project. I'm very happy that we get to do it and that we get to do it together.
Yeah.
It's so fun.
I don't have a whole lot from yesterday either. Talk about, my assistant starts tomorrow at the salon. I'm really excited about it. I feel good about it. I need to make lunch and dinner and I have a really busy week this week, and I'm just gonna barrel through. And that's about it. My baby slept last night. She hasn't really
Dude, so
slept
amazing.
Very long for the last week and a half, so I'm feeling a little peppy.
That's good. You were a little peppy yesterday too.
Yeah, I think I'm just vibing lately. Yeah,
you're totally vibing. I'll be back there with you soon.
Yeah, I mean, you're going through something super rough.
Been in quite the vortex since the
for
eclipse
a while.
Season. Yeah, this doesn't usually happen to me, but it's all part of life. And I mean, I always think like it's hard to go through such intense shit, but you know, it's such a balance in life, and like those really high, incredible moments that we are all pining for like only exist because of these harder moments in life too. It's like we have to have the contrast, we have to have both. And you know, I hate that I'm going through all of this, but I also have so much gratitude for it too, because it's just as important and powerful of an emotion as mm-hmm. the highs are. So, and again, I know, I think I said it yesterday, but the heartbreak, the loss is like so powerful, and that's because the love is so powerful too. So yeah, it's just gotta get through it, but I also don't want to get through it, which is crazy. But we've had like the best like last couple of weeks with her too, and Mark's been writing this song. I mean, I've heard him playing the tune for a while now, and he started like writing lyrics, and it's a song to her, and he started singing it in front of me last night. And like there's just this part, I don't even know what the lyric is because he can't even say it, like he just can't even get through it, and he just like, you know, gets frustrated and starts crying, and then I start crying, and it's so painful, but it's also beautiful, you know. It's mm-hmm. crazy. Oh, there was this thing. This is my other dog, Wonton. I don't know if I've ever said this on the air before, but I think it's pretty funny. She hates our song to Waking Up the Witch. Like, it's always been that way. Like, when I used to edit the podcast and I'd be working on it, she like gets alerted and looks at me so mad and walks out of the room. Like, something about it is like must be painful to her ears or something, like the horns or whatever.
So funny.
But she gets so moody and like will not have it. And because I remembered it, because when we were driving to the coast, and we always like pre-listen to the episodes before we put them out, after they've been edited, and we were listening to it, and you know, it's like wrapping up and it starts to play the song again, and she just gets so alerted and mad, and like, you know, she goes to the back of the truck and starts scratching at the window, like, get me the fuck out of here. And I just think, like, I'm sure it's hurt. Like, there's something that's got to be, like, a nuisance for her. I don't think it's, like, she has feelings about it. It's just that probably, like, painful. So but funny. It's also hilarious. Like, what? You don't like my podcast, Wonton?
Bitch.
So that's just some levity, I guess.
She's so sassy.
She is so sassy. I was like playing with the pendulum when we were camping, asking it questions. And like Tofu, our youngest dog, keeps cuddling Zoe. Like, he just won't leave her side. It's so sweet. And I was just like watching them. I was like, is Tofu like downloading all of the codes to like love us in the way that she loves us? And the pendulum starts swinging yes. And I was like, does Wonton know that Zoe's time is coming? And it said yes. And I was like, does she care? And it just starts spinning in a circle, which is just kind of like neutral emotion or healing emotion. But it just made me laugh so hard because she is very like self-involved for a dog, like she's such a cat. So it's, yeah, she's such a character, but I love her. She's funny. She makes me laugh all the time.
That's so cute.
Yeah, anyways,
I love it.
Yeah, love your dogs.
All right, our guest today is someone I love so much. I really appreciate she's gotten me through some really I wouldn't say hard, but like intense moments of early motherhood. And I think that anybody entering this phase can benefit from even just following Holly on Instagram. She is magic, and we're so grateful to have her.
Yeah, it was so nice to hear her story, and just for her to be so open about her experience. I really think it's going to be very touching and helpful to so many people. I love that about this podcast, is like that vulnerability where it's like, fuck, we need your story, because mm-hmm. so many people have your experience and they feel so isolated. And mm-hmm. it just, yeah, it's such a blessing that we get to hold space for that. So
yeah,
know you're gonna love it.
Enjoy.
Let's start by grounding our energy. If you can, close your eyes if that feels safe. And let's just take 3 deep grounding breaths. Breathe in through the nose. And release. Another deep breath in. And release. One last big breath in. And exhale. And I'd like to invite in our higher selves to join us today, and our spiritual guides, ancestors, and any other beautiful, loving energies that wish to surround us in love and protection, helping us to feel safe and grounded. Also like to invite in the higher selves of all who find this episode. Please allow for whatever is meant to come through for the highest good of all involved to come through in our conversation today. Thank you, thank you, thank you.
Thank you. Our guest today, I'm so excited about. Please introduce yourself.
Hi, I'm Holly, and I'm an RN, but I'm no longer in the system. That's an important part.
Mm-hmm. Ooh.
I am a certified breastfeeding specialist and a matrescence educator and guide. So that's what I do for my work. My little business is called Milk and Matrescence. Mm-hmm. And I have a husband and a almost 4-year-old and an almost 1-year-old. All of our birthdays are about to happen. So,
yay. Oh, wow.
She's also a women's circle holder.
Yes.
So we like to start from the very beginning. Like, tell us your story. Where were you born? What was your life like growing up? And how did you get to where you are now?
Yeah, so I was born in Southern Oregon in Klamath Falls, if anyone knows. It's in the middle of nowhere. It's a farming community, basically. And I grew up south of that, even more in the middle of nowhere, on like 6 acres. And my sweet little family was my mom and dad and my older sister. And I spent a lot of time just in like peace and quiet nature with animals. Pretty much my whole life was revolved around horses. I competed my whole childhood on horses.
Wow.
And we just like spent a lot of time in nature. And I was also the classic 90s kid where me and my sister were home alone a lot. And my parents were working full time. So
latchkey kids, yes. Unite.
Yeah. So I had a really sweet childhood. And then, and I was like ready to go as a teen. And I immediately was like taking college courses and got jobs and was out on my own as soon as I turned 18. And I went right into the medical field. I worked as a CNA while I went to paramedic school. And then I worked as a paramedic for about 10 years while I went to nursing school later on. And then I worked as a nurse. So I mostly worked in the ER.
And then, did you always know that you wanted to be in the medical world?
Yes, pretty much. When I was little, I thought I wanted to be a vet because I love animals so much. But living on a farm and needing to care for animals that were injured or sick, I literally could not tolerate it. I would just pass out. If animals were in pain, I was a mess. Like, I just literally could not function. So I realized immediately that I would have to work with humans in the medical field. I don't know, just like the compassion. I was like, oh, they're in pain. Yeah. Like, I can't explain it to them. And my body would just be like, nope, we're done. And I would literally pass out. Aww. So I realized, like, I decided I wanted to be a paramedic when I was like 13. I was doing a computer project at school, and it was like to, define a job and explain details about it. And I was like really interested in ambulances and emergencies. And I was always really interested in like the human body. And like, I kept all my own teeth that fell out. I was like a weird kid. I was really interested in like veins and bones. And my mom was like, okay. I was a weird kid. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so because I loved like the excitement of emergencies and like just like immediately jumping in to help change the course. And I also loved that in my work. I felt it was really impactful. Of course, there's a lot of like annoying stuff to deal with working in the emergency part of the medical field, because the public doesn't know what true emergencies are, and the American system is so bad that they don't have regular care, right?
Yeah.
But I felt that, you know, actually helping in an emergency and then sending them on their way was like a really nice way to work in the medical field. I absolutely loved it. I just loved every minute of working in the ER, pretty much, even when it was really hard and it was exhausting and stressful. But then I became an RN and I got hired in the ICU.
Wow.
And that changed my course pretty drastically, along with becoming a mother. So yeah, I started working in the ICU, or I was like IMCU. So it was still critical care, like really sick people, in 2019, and got pregnant then. And we were married earlier in the year, a few months later, got pregnant, started working as an RN. And I was, of course, put on to full-time nights.
Oh, my.
And while you were pregnant?
Yeah.
Wow.
It was rough. And then 2020 happened. And it was pretty horrid. You know, with, like, all the PPE and everything, being pregnant, I worked almost, like, until the end. I worked until, like, 32 weeks, to where I was, like, I literally not physically do this job anymore. You know, like just, it was way too much. And then
they're very pregnant and dealing with a world pandemic, like with no answers or knowledge yet at that point.
Yeah. So it was so like crazy. A lot of chaos. Right. And a lot of like, every time you came in, something was different. Like sometimes it was like, the whole unit was locked off and it was like, you can't drink water when you need to. You have to leave to go drink water. But if you leave to go drink water, your patient might die. So like we didn't have break nurses. Intense. Like, you know, and being pregnant, I was like needing to drink. Like, and rest sometimes. So yeah, then I had my son, my first, and this was in May of 2020, and he, like, my birth and everything was fine. Like, there's maybe a few things that would change about it, but I had no trauma, like most people do. And breastfeeding went great from the beginning, which was a thing I was super passionate about and I'm grateful for. But the literally hours later, I realized, I can't leave him and go to work. Like, I can't do it. Yeah. I felt like that would be traumatic. And I was right. I mean, I didn't have a plan, so I did have to go back to work. But man, I had a hard time adjusting to motherhood. So hard. I am Taurus, and I am very like, no, nothing's going to change.
Please don't make a change. Right?
And then, so I was super anxious, and I never had been in my life. I was a very grounded, calm person always, and suddenly I was extremely anxious, and I had this really tough baby. He was just super intense. He's a Gemini. super intense baby, extremely vocal, and if any little thing was off or he didn't like it, he was screaming, you know, which in my biology was screaming. Like, I was like, my baby cannot be crying. My baby cannot be upset. If he is, I am not okay. Right. So it was just like, kind of, we like perpetuated this anxiousness cycle for each other.
I cry every time my baby cries.
Yeah, I just,
which is like not often, but I cry every time.
Yeah,
I can't help it. I feel like I'm gonna lose my shit.
Yeah, like I was so anxious, and you know, anxious about going back to work, and then I was also like really sleep deprived, which did not help the anxiousness.
Yeah,
and I started trying to get him to take a bottle and he absolutely would not. And I was like getting help and trying all the things. And he was just like, no. And he would scream. So then I was like, now I like can't go back to work, even though I have to, because he's going to dehydrate while I'm gone. So I ended up like finding a therapist who helped save my life. We tried for a full month of getting him to take a bottle, and I had to extend my leave with no pay, of course. And I, you know, I ran out of like my paid days earlier on. And eventually he would take a bottle if it was 100 degrees or 99 degrees. If it was 99 degrees or less, no, absolutely not. That's how particular of a baby he was. Like, he knew.
Oh, man.
And I even asked a lactation consultant at the time. I was like, is this even possible or am I crazy? And she was like, yes, some babies are like this. It's possible. So, yeah, then I had to go back to work on nights. I did get to part-time, but, you know, it's two shifts a week. But
which are still 12-hour shifts, right?
Yeah, 12 and a half hours.
That's, oh, my God. To be away from your baby for 12 hours is fucking insane.
Yeah, dang. It is. It's not okay. And, I mean, I spent the whole day crying, of course, instead of sleeping. And so then my sleep deprivation and anxiety took a turn for the worst. And I was not well. I was mentally, emotionally, physically an absolute wreck. I have never been so unwell in my life. And, you know, I was obsessed with my son. I loved him so much that it was like scary. Like, I was like, I, like, my whole life is dedicated to him now, but I have to go to work during the pandemic with all the PPE. So then I'm trying to pump, trying to eat and drink enough to produce the milk, and like having to try to leave my patients and hope they survive with no break nurses.
Well, and like stress affects your milk more than anything.
Yeah. It was just so intense. And like the week I went back to work, all my hair started falling out. And like, I felt like I was going bald. And it was just horrid. And me and my husband, like, this whole time had no help, because I, not only was it 2020, but also I didn't realize how much help I would need. I had no idea that I would have a hard time even like drinking enough water and filling up my water bottle, because this kid could not be set down, you know? And so then I got into this cycle of dread. Like, during the day when the sun was out, I would feel okay. I would be like, okay, we can do this. We're going to make it. Although it was still really like stressful and hard, and definitely was losing my shit at times. But then the sun would go down and I would like descend into hell. And trigger warning here, I would have dark, intrusive thoughts. I would have suicidal thoughts. The dark intrusive thoughts were things like dying in a car accident, what's going to happen to my son, or like me hurting him intentionally, you know, like now baby's attacking me. you know, it was thoughts that I did not want to have, but kept happening, and they were terrifying. I was scared for myself. And that,
and you've never experienced anything like that before. So to you, that was like really scary.
It was absolutely shocking. Like I was like, I am not okay. Like, and then of course my son too would have like hours long witching hour every evening where he would be crying.
For how long? Like how old was he?
2 or 3 hours a lot of the time. And it was like months of this.
Dang.
I don't even know. Maybe from like 2 or 3 months. He started getting like really tough at exactly 1 month old. And I was like, oh, he's like waking up to the world. It was months. I mean, it was like maybe until 6 months he quit doing that quite as much. Around 9 months old, I was starting to see a light at the end of the tunnel.
That's a really long time.
So yeah, I would just like spiral into hell, and you know, I'd be trying to soothe him, trying everything. Me and my husband would switch off. I'd be like dying to eat dinner because I'm starving to death, and I wouldn't be able to set him down. And all of these dark, scary thoughts. And I at first was trying to like rock him. I would nurse him, rock him to sleep, try to set him in the crib. And he did not ever have that. I mean, sometimes it'd be like a few minutes, or like eventually we'd maybe get 1 hour, maybe from like 10 p.m. for an hour or something, you know, but he was just, he was like, absolutely not. Like he would clutch my finger as I would try to get away. And, you know, society tells us that separation is a good thing. Independence is a good thing. And, you know, that we need to be able to set our babies in the crib for them to be safe to sleep. And as a lot of moms know, that's just not the truth of our experience. But eventually I finally, like found people on Instagram that were actually helpful to me and like my type of baby and like the way that I want to be as a mother, which is, you know, connection is everything. So I saw like somewhere, someone was like, just let your baby sleep on you. They want to be with you. And I was like, yes, like why am I fighting this? Like why am I trying to control? Like you can't control baby sleep. But that was one of my anxiety things, right? It's like anyone who has some anxiety is trying to control something to make themselves feel better. And sleep was really my focus because I was so sleep deprived.
I can relate to that so much. I feel so grateful for having you as a resource and then just all the women that came before me so that I didn't have to fight a lot of these things, because like literally finding the co-sleeping Instagram page is the only thing that made my anxiety go away and made me feel safe enough to actually get any kind of sleep with my baby. Because I was, she has never slept in a bassinet. She has never slept in a crib. She maybe took one nap one time and that was it. And I haven't even really tried because like I don't care to. But I'm just super grateful for that resource, because before then I was like, everyone tells you, you know, like this isn't safe. My mom was living in my house and she was kind of like, you shouldn't do that. And I'm just like, you need to mind your fucking business. And just like reading, and then I'm in like one of the Facebook groups and just like reading other women, like talking to each other about how natural this is and how women in all over the world actually sleep with their babies and all other mammals sleep with their babies. Like it's not, it's actually not natural. So like your child's not the problem. It's the whole system that's like pitted against
society.
Him. Exactly.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. I also have a question about when you were going to work. Did mm-hmm. since you were so anxious with your baby, did you ever sometimes feel relieved at work and then guilty about that? Or were you always stressed to be away from him?
No, I was always extremely stressed to be away from him. Like, yeah. Even when I was doing something for myself that I really wanted, like a massage or
yeah,
just like going outside for a minute by myself.
And then was your husband the one staying home with him?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So he stayed home with him and that was also extremely stressful for him. But yeah, just like mm-hmm. I could not be away from my son for any reason or any length of time without having extreme anxiety.
Yeah.
And that didn't go away for me until he was like 2 years old or like maybe 2.5.
Mm-hmm. And I think that speaks so loudly about like the postpartum period. Like once you have a baby, you are always postpartum forever for the rest of your life. But it takes like at least the first 2 years for your body really start to like adjust to it a little bit. And here in the United States, we are rushed back to work. Some people have to go straight back to work, which is just so insane. Crazy. And like 2 months is like good if you get 2 months off, and that's just not enough time.
No.
It's not sustainable for the child. It's not sustainable for the birthing person. It's so insane. It's like, and this is why you see that 2 years later, you're finally starting to kind of even out.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, I was starting to feel like a little bit more like myself around like 18 months or so. And then so in that, like, you know, after the first year and through the second year were like me and my son's glory times. Like we hit our stride, we were little besties, we had the most fun. It was just so much fun. Together, just me and him. And we just had the best time finally, and I was starting to feel really good. And a part of that was like, you know, a part of all of it was not being nurtured, not only emotionally, like being held by other women and being told I was going to be okay. But the other part of that too was nutritionally. Like I honestly, I couldn't eat like I needed to. And I think I was extremely depleted in like minerals, vitamins, everything, which also contributes to anxiety and sleep issues and, you know, like depression and,
which I think is most women's story. Mm-hmm. I don't know that I even think postpartum hair loss is like directly linked to just having a baby. I think it's stress. I think it's sleep deprivation. I think it's deficiencies. I don't think that it's just like something that happens.
I 100% agree with you, because then I had my second and a lot of moms were like, oh, postpartum hair loss is worse each time. And I was like, really? But this time, because of my experience and the work that I do, I covered everything. We were fully supported like for the first month, and then we were partially supported for the next like 6 weeks or so. And I didn't even notice any hair loss.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
And it's
so let's
nutrition, right?
I mean, same here. I want to go back to kind of you finally deciding you couldn't work anymore in the like industry, and how you were even brave enough to get pregnant with a second one after all you went through with your first.
Yeah. So, I mean, the whole time I was working, I ended up working with my son for about 2.5 years. I was part-time the whole time. I was able to get off of nights after, I think, the first 6 weeks, but I had to fight for it. My manager was just like, no. And she was also a mother, and I told her how bad I was struggling and that I was scared for myself. Not only driving to and from work was unsafe, but to be like deciding, you know, drip medications directly into people's veins. I was like,
I didn't even think about that.
It's not safe. And thankfully I never made a terrible mistake, but I don't know how, like, I think it was just pure adrenaline. Cortisol just through the roof was what kept me like able to think. And that was the only way I think that I survived. But yeah, so then it was just like in conversation the whole time with my husband, like, what are we going to do? What are we going to do? And I took about a year to brainstorm, basically. I realized before I even went back to work, I was like, I can't do this, first of all. Second of all, the world absolutely has to change, and I feel like I need to do something about it, but I don't know what that would look like or how I would do it or like what capacity I'll even have to do anything. So I took about a year, and I was talking to other women who do different kinds of work. Like, I met with a midwife and a doula, and started looking into like the lactation stuff. And I came across the word matrescence on Instagram, and I was what is that? I need to know everything. So for those who don't know, matrescence is the developmental process of becoming a mother. And it is a massive undertaking similar to adolescence, although our society does not acknowledge it in any way. Our society, acknowledges that adolescence is a difficult time. That there's physical changes, there's brain changes, our whole world and body and role in this life is changing. And people accept that. But when it comes to mothers, they're like, no, just get right back to everything you did before. Pretend like nothing happened, which is not even possible for mothers to do.
No.
So that was a course that I eventually took. It's called Seasons of Matrescence. Nikki McCann runs it. She's in Australia. She is amazing, and it was life-changing. So a lot of it was like working through our own experience of becoming a mother so that we could serve other mothers. Hold on, baby's mad.
Okay.
And so, working through our own stuff, integrating it all, learning amazing, incredible things. And I was doing that while working and being mother. It was pretty intensive. Like, there was weekly stuff. And then I also wanted to do lactation as well. So I got my certified breastfeeding specialist certificate, through Lactation Education Resource. So I started taking that too. I was just doing it all. I was like, there has to be a way out. I must.
Yeah. Do
it. And it was hard. Like, I was like, doing the modules and writing notes while like eating dinner with my son. Like every moment my husband could give me to work on it, I was jumping on my laptop. And, then I would go to work for the 2 days and need like a recovery day every time. Recovery days would have been ideal, but I didn't have that. I was just so extremely motivated. Like, I'd never been more motivated in my life to get out of the system, because
it was truly life or death for you. You had to make it happen. Yeah.
And while I'm doing this, by then I was working in ICU, and that also felt like death to me, because we get these chronically ill people who are at the end of their life, and I'm pumping them full of drugs, sending them out and then they're coming right back in again. Mm-hmm. And so that was happening, which was frustrating because it's like, this isn't helping people.
No.
This is sick care. We're not teaching anyone anything. We're not holding their hand or supporting them through anything. We're just patching them. We're just pumping them full of drugs. Like, what are we doing?
Because that's what makes money.
Yes.
Yeah.
And then also, like, oftentimes you have people that are actually actively dying in the ICU. And either them not understanding and knowing everything, but making certain decisions for themselves, like while they're still able, or their family members making decisions to do everything you can, which is trauma and horrible and torture. So I was leaving my son, who I did not want to be away from and was super anxious to leave, to go in to torture people at the end of their life.
Oh,
and it was literally my soul was dying. Like, I was like, the life is being sucked out of me. And, you know, I would even have to like fight the doctors for people to be able to die sometimes. Like, I would have people be like, I can't do this anymore. Like, I'm done. Mm. And they're like fully able to make those decisions, even though their body is failing them. And I'd have to fight the doctors on it. And I'm like, what are we doing? Like, why do you want to try to keep this person alive? First of all, because they would have zero quality of life.
Well, is that like a legality thing too? Like, legally, do you have to try everything to keep someone alive, or can they make that decision for themselves? I know people can refuse care.
Yeah, they can if they're able, like if they can answer the questions like who they are, where they are, what's happening, like, you know, they're lucid enough, they can make their own decisions. But, you know, here in America, we are so bad at death and dying. We're terrified of it. Nobody wants to talk about it. Nobody wants to accept that it's a thing. You know, so like people often couldn't even face that for themselves.
Yeah.
And then also, it's like a thing with critical care doctors, with some of them, is to like do everything. That's just what they do. And that's how they feel like they're doing the right thing. And oftentimes that's not the right thing.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's like people think the ICU is like saving lives, but that's an extremely rare occurrence where you get like a person who had this crazy thing happen and we help them and they actually go back to like living a normal life and go on their way, you know, like that would be doable for me, but that's not what's happening there most of the time. So it was just getting to a breaking point where like we were talking about it almost every time with my therapist, with my husband. It was like, you know, money was clearly a major issue for us. That's why I couldn't just be like, peace, I'm out of here.
Yeah.
And it eventually just came to a point where my therapist was like, tell her she can quit. And like, we, you know, we discussed all the money and everything over and over and over. And my husband was like, are you okay if it's really hard or if we struggle for a while? And I was like, I'll do anything. Like, I'll sell my belongings. Like, I don't care. And he was like, okay, you can quit. And I just started bawling. And then, of course, right after, like, I was already starting my business, you know? So I was just full in. I was like, okay, now I'm switching gears and doing this other thing. And, but it was fulfilling. It was exciting. It was joyful. And, you know, it was like, I can be away from my child for an hour to do this. This is great. You know,
also 1 hour versus 12 fucking hours. Like,
Yeah. So, I mean, that was kind of my journey. And, I don't think I can ever go back to the medical field.
So can you tell us about getting pregnant with your second and the ways, like what you learned from your first experience and how it was different and the ways that you found support and did support yourself in that journey?
Yeah. So my son was about like 2 is when I was starting to want to talk about it. I always knew I wanted like 2 or 3 children. And also there was kind of a timeline issue because my husband is a lot older than me. And so it was going to start be getting weird if we were waiting like years. Okay.
So how much older?
He's 14 years older than me.
Okay.
So that was like a part of the conversation, but my husband, for him, it was a hard no for a long time. He was like, "Are you insane?" Yes, I am. He was like, "How are we going to possibly do that again?" And, you know, he's like, "How can we do both of them? Like, what on earth are you talking about?" And I just knew, like, first of all, I didn't really care at that point. I was just like, I want another baby. And
everything is like temporary too. Like, yeah, it was fucked up for a while, but like it, when you're out of it, you're like, it doesn't last forever.
Yeah. It's all a season. Right. Mm-hmm. So, and I also knew, I was like, it will be different with each child. Like, it's not going to be the same situation, first of all, because it's a totally different kid with a different temperament and everything. And second of all, now I know better. And now I know how to set us up well and not just be like, oh, we're doing this. Like, it's happening, you know? So we also had to work through therapy with that. And at first, when it was a hard no for him, my therapist was like, okay, like, let's try. Can you do 6 months of absolutely not mentioning it? And I was like, okay. Like, can you do it? And she was like, let's just like give him some time and, you know, give you and your son like time to, you know, like get him to another level of where he's at, because, you know, we were really entering full on toddlerhood. And like figure out this job situation, because while we're talking about this, I was still working and wanting to get out of the work. So then I did the 6 months, and like literally to the day I was like, so and my husband was like, oh my God. So yeah, we were starting to talk about it again. And then I started to get like to where anytime I saw like a pregnancy announcement, I would just break down in tears. I was so sad. I was like, I want my other baby like so bad. And you know, I was just like having the best time with my son too. And he was starting to become this really social little creature. And I was like, he would love a sibling so much. And so, yeah, my husband was just starting to warm up to the idea. Like, it was no longer a hard no, but it wasn't a yes. And we had one chance and I made it happen. And I was like,
nice.
I think I'm actually like probably 2 or 3 days too late with my cycle with ovulation. And I told him that. I was like, I mean, I think I'm too late. Maybe it's possible. And he was like, yeah, right. He's like, you're just telling me that. I was like, no, really, I do think it's too late. Like, I really did. And then I immediately knew that I was pregnant. Although I did not, it actually took a little bit longer to get a positive pregnancy test. So it was driving me crazy because, like, intuitively I knew. And then I started getting like the sore boobs, and I was like, so hopeful, so extremely hopeful. But I wasn't getting positive pregnancy tests yet, like the week that I was supposed to have my cycle. But yeah, then I was pregnant and it was a girl, and I was just like dying of happiness. Like, I always thought that I wanted to have boys. And then when I started doing this women's work, I was like, oh, I want a girl. Like, I want to raise a girl in a way that she is not a people pleaser. She's proud of her body. She celebrates her cycles. She works in collaboration with women, not competition with women. Like, you know, I just want to change it all with a girl. And
it's like such an honor to raise a little girl. It really is.
It is. It really is. And yeah, so she came and I was pretty much, so I was actually 6 weeks pregnant with her when I quit working as a nurse.
Did you know you were pregnant when you quit?
Mm-hmm.
So all at the same time. It's like,
yeah, I knew I had the positive pregnancy test by between the third and fourth week.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I knew. And then right at the 6 weeks, I was starting to get nauseous and I already had been talked to about calling out of work sick so much because if my son, and my son never slept through the night, by the way, until he was almost 3 years old. So I was still pretty sleep deprived. And if it was he was awake a lot that night, I was I can't go. I can't. I have no brain function. So I was already in trouble for calling out sick a lot. And I just finally went in and I was I'm giving you my notice. I'm 6 weeks pregnant. I'm not doing this again with another child.
No. Mm-hmm. Wow.
Yeah. So I was starting my business and I was pregnant. And then I got the extreme exhaustion. And I would nap with my son every single day.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes fall asleep in the evening too before I could get through the nighttime routine. But the whole pregnancy, I was working on setting us up postpartum. I did not even think about the birth once. I was just birth happens. It's fine. Not worried about it.
Mm-hmm.
But the postpartum, I was covering every detail possible. So, part of this was asking my husband, talk to me about your daily activities that you do that you're not sure if you can do once a baby comes. Because as a mother who just gave birth needs to heal and rest and breastfeed, you're not doing anything else. Okay. A lot of moms, I'll be able to throw in a load of laundry or make my lunch or do some dishes. No. If you're doing that, you're risking your health when you're postpartum.
Hi.
But so for my husband, because he's an extremely involved, helpful part of the household, right? Part of that was asking him what he needs covered. But so I thought of everything, not only the postpartum doula, but my friends, my babysitter, my family on call, who's going to water the garden? I love gardening, part of my soul. And if it would have shriveled and died away while I was postpartum, I would be devastated. So someone's got to be out there watering. Someone needs to let the chickens in and out of their coop in the morning and the night, throw them some food, make sure they have water. Who's feeding the cat and changing the litter box, and who's playing with my son because he has energy. He needs to go. He has to be outside every day or we go insane. Every detail of everything. Who's going to help me with the laundry and wash the dishes? I was able to have my husband stay home from work for the first month, which, I wish it could have been more, but it couldn't. And then, so at first I had it set up to where I would never be alone with both of them because I knew I couldn't meet both of their needs, let alone my own.
Mm-hmm.
And then I had it slowly ease in after 6 weeks to be sometimes I was alone for a few hours with them, but it was someone was there first to help me get set up so we could survive those hours.
Mm-hmm.
And then someone was coming soon after to help pick up the pieces. Right.
Mm.
And it went great. It was beautiful.
Yay.
It was perfect. It was healing. It was redemptive. Like it was, it was everything it should be.
And you had your meal train.
Yes, I had the meal
as well. I think that's really important. That saved my fucking ass.
Yes. Yes. I had the freezer full of things. And like people often forget about like breakfast and lunch. And like the meal trains just do dinner, or like they have dinners in the freezer. You need to eat other times a day, you know? So I have like smoothie packs ready to go in the freezer. I had different meals. Some like family and friends helped me make some things and get them in the freezer first. And then I have the meal train, people bringing me fresh food. And people also gave us like gift cards for DoorDash, was extremely helpful. And then I utilized this program too called Grandma To Go, which is only here. Unfortunately, it's not like a nationwide thing. It was started by a doula and it's free to families. And it's a volunteer grandma who's trained in current best practices. And they just come help you. They're like another version of a postpartum doula, essentially.
Wow, that's amazing.
And the grandma that we got, she's going to be in our life forever.
Oh, cute.
Absolutely love her. We don't have
family. I thought I made that up. I swear I saw you post something about it, and then I like couldn't find anything. And I don't know, I didn't think to ask you, but I was like, did I make that up?
No, you did not. It is kind of hard to find. So it's through our pretty family cool. nurturing center, and it's it's all run by grants. Through the county.
What's a family nurturing center?
So it's a place that is all free resources to families. And then they also have like classes and things that you can take. And a lot of it serves like low income families. So there's like a diaper closet and you can go get diapers, wipes, food, like all kinds of resources. Physical things like that. And then they also like teach people, support people through different struggles and things. And they do like fun events for children. It's just like a godsend.
That's amazing.
Yeah. So this Grandma To Go thing needs to be a national thing. Like someone's got to make that happen. It's not going to be me, but someone's going to do it. Because like, first of all, we were just lucky with the grandma that we got. She is a magical human. She is just endlessly positive and fun and has energy. And she's just the best. She came in and played with my son. She would bring activities. They would do bubbles outside. They would paint and color. And then she started bringing these big sensory bins. Like they dump beans all over a blanket and like drive tractors through it. Like she just did, she did it all. She was the best.
So that's good.
So awesome.
And she'd fold my laundry.
I mean, it's so fun for her too.
Yeah. She was having the best time. And she's like, I love doing dishes. And I was like, are you
okay? Oh my gosh. Like, move in.
Yeah.
So I think this is a great segue to talk about your business.
Yeah. So I do one-to-one lactation support. So that can look like prenatal education, which is extremely important, I will add.
Life-changing.
Absolutely life-changing, if I do say so myself.
If I do say so myself. I worked with you. Prenatally, and breastfeeding was something that I was really nervous about and didn't know how I felt about. Like, I knew that nutritionally it was important, but to me that was the only thing that mattered. And I felt like a huge weight lifted off my shoulder after just spending that hour with you, and so much more confident and like almost a little bit excited to try.
I'm so glad. Yeah, it's just we're lacking so much inherent breastfeeding knowledge in this country. Most people never see a woman breastfeed, or if you do, it's like a few seconds out of your life and that's it. So we just truly don't know. things that other cultures who sit together and watch women breastfeed in different stages would know. And yeah, so like these little micro decisions that we can make along the way could have us sabotaging our own journey because we don't know better.
Yeah. Mm.
So yeah, and that can look like in-home postpartum support if you are in Southern Oregon. But most of it I do virtually. And mm-hmm. I also support the other stages, like if you're struggling with certain issues or, you know, needing to pump and go back to work or starting solids or you're weaning, like all the different stages I help with. And it is just so much fun. I love it. I'm obsessed with breastfeeding. And I just love being with mamas and babies. Mm-hmm. And then I do my circles. So I was doing a lot of different women's circles, and I'm thinking of getting back into some in-person women's circles now that Brightly is almost a year.
Crazy.
Yeah, I can't believe it. But like my support circle that I have is called Milk, Matrescence, and the Moon. So it's a monthly support circle. There is other support built in, or you can just attend the women's circles. And each circle has a different theme, all revolving around matrescence. And there's all different things that we work through with that, like grief in motherhood, finding your new self in motherhood, working through like any of the things that didn't go how you wanted to. It's just like such a beautiful way to be in community together. I mean, that's what we need as mm-hmm. moms, you know, we need to be.
And those are all virtual.
Yes. Those are all virtual. So yeah, there's like some of them, how I have little, like workbooks or reflection questions that we do ahead of time, and others we just show up and usually have different prompts. We do like little easy rituals like journaling or just little like fun questions. Sometimes we, you know, have like I assign you something to do, like get out in nature, you know, just like things that are totally doable for new moms, pregnant moms or new moms. So that it doesn't feel like more things that you have to do. It's literally just you're being held. We are sharing our stories and we're getting support if we need it. Otherwise we're just being heard and held.
Yeah.
That's so powerful.
So good. You were just such an important support person for me, and I still feel like someone I can lean on no matter what. And I'm just like super grateful for you throughout my whole journey of motherhood. It has made like one of the biggest impacts, I think. I would like to ask you some questions about like common misconceptions about breastfeeding and little facts that could help someone that doesn't know. I feel like no one knows the literal basic things, like the emptying the boob makes it fill up with more milk. Like people don't even know that.
Yes.
It's crazy to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Everyone thinks that you need some sort of supplement or this lactation cookie, or if you drink a sports drink that will make more milk, like all these different things. And while there are
some body
herbs, while there are some herbs that could help increase your milk supply, the thing that drives it hormonally is to remove milk. The more milk you remove, the more you make and the quicker.
Supply and demand.
Yes.
Makes sense.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So like there will be an entire aisle in the store of all the things that help with lactation. You don't need a single one of it. You need a good latch is what you need. That's it.
How do you get a good latch?
So first of all, it shouldn't hurt. a lot of women like are breastfeeding through intense pain and like just
bleeding
hard. No, that is not the way. That is not the thing that is going to get you through this breastfeeding journey, is for you to have more grit to get through pain. No. So it needs to be like a deep enough latch to where it doesn't cause pain. Your baby needs to be able to use their tongue properly. So sometimes that's from a tongue tie, if it's an issue. Sometimes it's tension in the body from birth or postpartum. So like CST, craniosacral therapy, or chiropractic can make a massive difference for a baby if you're having trouble with latch issues. And so you can have some soreness at first, for sure. That's a part of it, but you should never have pain. And the soreness might look like right at first, as soon as baby latches, it's a little painful, but then as baby is nursing, it doesn't stay painful. It doesn't get worse. It doesn't feel bad. It should feel just fine, actually. And then baby should have like this wide open jaw. If they can't open their jaw very far, it's tension, and that needs to be addressed. If you're having struggles with breastfeeding or your latch, there's really like a whole process of like all these different people that could possibly help you to get there. It's not just like, oh, I go see, you know, a lactation consultant in the hospital once. Like that's not going to be what helps you if you really want to breastfeed and you're struggling. It's going to be like nervous system management for the mother baby. It's going to be like body work, like the CST or the chiropractic. It's going to be supportive attitudes from the people who are around you. So, you know, there's a whole system that could help you get there. It's not just like getting baby on the boob sometimes. And it starts out hard, but then once you make it, it's like the easiest thing in the world, and it's joyful and it's beautiful. All you have to do is get out a boob.
Magic. What is cluster feeding?
Ooh, my daughter was the cluster feed queen. So cluster feeding, first of all, is totally normal and natural. It is a part of the process. So a lot of people start panicking when their baby's cluster feeding because they think, oh, my baby's starving, I'm not making enough, something is wrong. No, it is literally your baby upping your supply intentionally, which might just be they're working on your supply, or it might be that they're in a growth spurt and it's pretty intense. It's usually a certain part of the day that a baby will cluster feed. And oftentimes it's in the evening, because in the morning your milk is more abundant, and in the evening or the like second half of the day, you have a little bit less milk because of the hormonal situation that happens. So oftentimes it's in the evening or the afternoon, something like that. And sometimes this will go on for like a couple of days and then your supply is up and baby's happy. Or sometimes this is how a baby is every evening for a while. Could be like weeks sometimes. That's how my
daughter does that just was. Mean that they're like seeming to be more hungry and you're feeding more often? Is that what cluster feeding is? So they will feed
really often, which, you know, a breastfed baby needs to feed very often, 24 hours a day. The structure of our milk is like 1% protein. So humans, which are carry mammals, so we're like the apes, the monkeys, we're meant to have our baby on us always and breastfeed very often, 24/7. And a lot of people don't know or expect that. So cluster feeding would look like wanting to nurse every 30 minutes or so. Maybe it's an hour, maybe it's you know, like 15 minutes and they're pissed again.
My mom was like, I don't think she needs to eat again. And I'm like, if she's crying, I'm going to put her on the poop. Like, that's what she wants. That's the only thing that calms her.
Yeah, you.
Yes.
And so I did. I just let her nurse all night long. And it was, I would cry because it was exhausting. And it had been like 5 fucking hours. Mm-hmm. And I'd be like, just go to sleep. What is wrong with you? Why? And I'm sorry. I'm not talking bad about you. It's normal.
Like, excuse me.
Hi.
Yes, it really is a part of it, and it's so hard. And you know, most people aren't not expecting that, first of all, and then second of all, are not accepting of it either.
But that's another like good point, is you can't overfeed a breastfed baby.
Yes. Yes, you cannot overfeed a breastfed baby. Now, if you do have oversupply, which is actually more common than an undersupply, than a low supply, mm-hmm. You know, babies can like spit up more, have more reflux,
well, yeah.
be a little more fussy if they're just like drowning in milk, right? Which is how my baby, that was my second.
Same.
Yeah. So, but yeah, you cannot overfeed a breastfed baby. If you're doing bottles, yes, you can overfeed, and that's an issue for different reasons. But nursing is the answer to everything. Any minor inconvenience, put that baby on the boob and all will be well. And that's
Can we talk about that? Like immune stuff, the like spit into the nipple thing.
Yeah.
That's all fascinating.
So we, you know, the colostrum, first of all, is basically the intro, the very beginning of the immune system. And it's purposefully such a low volume, it's very concentrated, that it immediately starts working in the gut. And as we know, for the microbiome, the gut is essentially like the brain of the immune system.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that's where a lot of people run into issues too, is like the colostrum is such a small amount, and babies can often cluster feed in the beginning or be like really fussy in the first weeks. And so then they start supplementing, but that's against our design, right? Like this colostrum needs to be without other volume in order to have its great impact on the gut.
And I think that that's where the problem starts most of the time.
Yes.
Like from all the people that I talk to.
Yes. Yeah, it really does. The very beginning is a precarious time to where you can set yourself up well or do things that will have like create issues or have you struggling later on. So yeah, it's vitally important to just like nurse all the time as much as you can with a good latch in the beginning, and that's what sets you up for success later. So the spit in the saliva in the nipple thing, it's called the backwash effect, and it is literally your baby's saliva backwashes a little bit into your nipple, and this signals your immune system to create whatever antibodies they need. So whatever they have been exposed to, if you haven't been exposed yet, your nipple will be exposed. Your immune system will respond and will give baby the antibodies that they need.
That's so cool.
Yeah, it's just amazing.
Sorry.
And then another part of that too is like kissing your baby. So
yeah, I love this.
Yes, you're essentially like sampling what they've been exposed to and creating antibodies for them if you're kissing your baby.
We're animals. That's so cool.
We are animals. People forget this, but we really are.
So if your baby's in pain, breastfeed. If your baby's sick, breastfeed. It helps with all those things.
Yes, it's so extremely comforting and regulating to their nervous system. They only know that they are safe if they are within sensory distance of their caregivers. So they can see you, smell you, feel you. And if they are attached to the boob, they know I'm safe. Everything's great, no matter what's going on. And it does lower pain. Like if they're teething, for example, or they're sick, wow. It really does lower pain levels to nurse because it releases all those love hormones.
Why do people say to not nurse your baby to sleep?
So essentially, it is to create more separation and independence, to get baby to sleep on their own so that the mom can go do other things. This is a patriarchal construct. So it's based in consumerism. If the mom's not nursing her baby to sleep at every nap, she can go work or buy things. A lot of this, like, because this all comes from old white men from quite a while ago in our society, that also the woman needs to get back to serving her husband.
Yep.
Right?
Just like, about to say, get back in the kitchen.
Yeah. Get that baby off the boob, get into the kitchen and your husband's bed. And it's like the grossest thing in the world to me, because our, like, the all the things wrong with our society is because of how babies were raised to, you know, be basically, we're telling them your needs don't matter. Other things matter more. And they internalize that, and they grow up to know that they're not the most important thing in the world. Other things are.
I think that the best advice I can give to a new mom is, like, it really is just an intuitive thing. It's like, if you just do what you think you're supposed to do in that moment, then, like, everything's really easy.
Yes.
Like, I think maybe I spiraled a little bit the first week or two, but then I always had you to fall back on for questions. But, and the La Leche resources, like, just reading through all of that really helped me. But just, yeah, like, following... trusting your gut and doing those things, like, that's what your baby needs.
Yes. And it's so much easier when we are following our intuition and being responsive to our babies rather than trying.
Instead of, like, this is right, this is wrong.
Yes.
Don't do that.
Yes. Like,
so what about the moms? Sorry.
Like, thinking your baby needs to sleep at a certain time. Like,
no, I was going to say that too.
Like, they'll sleep when they're tired. You can support them in different ways. And if you know that they are sleepy, you can try your little tricks. And if that doesn't work, take a break and try again later. It's okay.
Mm-hmm. What were you going to say, Amber?
I was going to ask about, like, the moms who end up not breastfeeding because they quote unquote can't. Like, is that just going back to the things that you were suggesting of what could be causing them to not have success in breastfeeding, or is there places where some people just can't?
So it's a little of both. The main issue is a societal issue. Part of that is the formula and their marketing strategies. So they are very ingrained into our society to the point that it is normalized, and that's the first thing people think of when they're struggling, is they think, oh, I should try formula or give formula. And then really there's only, like, estimates are either, like, around 1% or around 5% of the population of women who just cannot make enough milk for their babies.
Wow.
So that would be,
that's so small.
Yeah, that would be like an insufficient glandular tissue issue, which is a thing, and that's just like during development of your breasts, you have not developed enough of the tissue that makes milk, and it's very rare. The rest of the time, when someone cannot breastfeed, it's a societal problem in two ways, mostly. One is that they're not set up to have the support to be able to mm-hmm. breastfeed. They don't have the knowledge. The other part is all of the birth trauma and the interventions that were done that do have risk of low supply or, like the stress and trauma, not allowing the hormonal situation to happen the way that mm-hmm. it needs to be. So,
but that's not always the case. I had a pretty fucked up situation and I've been able to breastfeed very successfully. And I think that was another thing I was really afraid of when I was going through everything mm-hmm. was that would affect us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that is a really good point, is that even if you have interventions, drugs, trauma, all the things happen, you can breastfeed. Mm-hmm. It can create some more obstacles. But mm-hmm. when you are educated and determined, that's really all you need. And when you have supportive people around you, that really makes a difference. There was actually like a study, and a husband's attitude about breastfeeding had a large impact on how long a woman breastfed.
Oh, I believe that. Yeah. 100%.
Yeah. So amazing. That makes a big difference. I often, like when I do my prenatal education, I tell them to bring their partner if they can. They don't always, but I do find it to be really important for an involved partner to know these things too.
Totally.
Okay. Is there anything else? I feel like we should wrap up. I feel like all the babies are getting kooky. Is there anything else you'd like to add? I want to just say Holly offers so much free education just through her Instagram. So I think that's a great place to start if you can't financially swing it. But where can people find you?
I am at Milk and Matrescence. It's all spelled out on Instagram. And I share a lot there. But if anyone has like questions or wants to connect or have support, I love chatting with other women. So don't be afraid to just message me.
Do you have a deck you want to pull from for us, or would you like us to pull a card?
Oh, I do have one. Let me grab it.
Yeah.
All right. I got a good one. It's Queen of Sheba, which stands for wisdom. So the shadow to that is ignorance. Kind of what we're talking about here.
Yep.
I'll read this little quote at the beginning, but there's a whole description here. It says, "Let us seek her and we shall find her. Let us love her and she will not withdraw herself from us. Let us pursue her and we shall overtake her. Let us ask and we shall receive. Let us turn our hearts to her so we may never forget her."
Amazing.
Love that. Oh,
thank you so much for that. This has been so good.
Thank you for
everything
that.
I hoped it would be. This is our third try. Yeah. We finally did it.
We got our questions.
Okay, we do have two questions we want to ask you before we hop off of here.
The first one is, what is something that you just can't live without for self-care?
Ooh, I think my herbal tea. So I get this tea. It's called, this herbal tea is called Be Calm and Carry On. And it's by Oshala Farms, which is local to here. It's in the Applegate Valley. And I love it. It is nervous system regulating. It is calming. It has like St. John's wort, lemon balm. It's so good. And it's delicious. Mm.
Okay. If you could tell your younger self one thing, whether that was as a little girl all the way up to yesterday, what would it be?
It would be to be more open to my ideas as to how my life is going to look and the path that I'm going to take, because there's going to be many turns and just be open and willing rather than being resistive and stuck in certain patterns.
Beautiful.
That's such good advice.
Thank you.
Carry that with you the rest of your life, because I'm sure you have more twists and turns up ahead.
Oh, I'm sure. I am sure.
I love that. Well, thank you so much, Holly. This was wonderful.
Thank you.
So educational. I just know you're going to help so many people.
Well, thank you. I love doing it.
All right. What should they do?
Oh, go hug a dog.
Touch grass.
Mm-hmm. Those are good. One thing that...
What do you got?
...that I was able to manage today as a mother was a almost everything shower.
Wow.
I laid baby down. I put a story on for my son. And I got real ambitious. And I was like, I'm going to shave my armpits. And then the baby...
Hell yeah.
And I was like, I'm going to shave the lower half of my legs. Yes. And the baby was still asleep, and I was like, I'm gonna shave my whole legs. Like, it was fantastic.
Yes. Oh, I love that. That's so
taking
fun.
Everything shower.
Yes,
I love it.
Thank you so much.
Thank you guys.
This episode has been produced and mixed by Caleb Tunstall.
Find us on TikTok and Instagram at Waking Up the Witch.
Please email us your witchy stories, ghost stories, corrections, and advice questions to wakingupthewitch@gmail.com.
Love you.
Love you.